Evident Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this July the 14th on the West Coast, now July the 15th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. We'd like to welcome those listening in around the world on Wind Talkers Radio Network and hope you find tonight's show interesting, if nothing else. Well, we always tell you that when we have good news, we'll report it. And certainly we've, throughout the years, been presenting solutions to some of the problems that are going on. Sometimes it's just a matter of revealing the truth and letting you discover it for yourself. And then sometimes it's just an act of God finally taking place that brings the truth out in another way. And I got just a brief, short message without much of an explanation from Dr. H. Huat that the false charges against him were summarily dropped. And in celebration of that, it reminded me of a piece that goes back quite some time. It was actually written in the late 1800s, but implied to have taken place in 1820 in Spain, in fact. And this was from an opera written by Georges Bizet, a French composer, and it's called Carmen. Now, Carmen was a gypsy, and she fell in love with a colonel in the military by the name of Don Jose. And this created a problem because he had his own woman prior to falling in love with Carmen. And then he sort of had a falling out with his former lover. And then he had sort of a mutiny within the military. And he went bad and turned to becoming a smuggler. All of this from his relationship with Carmen. And eventually, Carmen fell in love with a matador, a bullfighter. So he had, and I'm speaking now of Carmen's lover, he had to do away with her. And that is the gist of the story. So In celebration of Truat's victory, I thought I would play a short encapsulated version by Spike Jones and his City Slickers. This is Bizet's Carmen. Thank you. Spike Jonze and his version of Carmen. And I think that's a good song to celebrate the good news we got tonight. Time to bring my guests on board who have been waiting patiently in the wings, being entertained, though. So, my first guest hosts a website called educate-yourself.org. And on that site, he publishes the essays of my second guest, G.S. Livingstone, and my first guest, Mr. Ken Adachi. Gentlemen, welcome to the show, and thanks for hanging in there.
Thank you, Don. Glad to be back.
And G.S. here, and that's it's great to be on with Spike Jonze. One microphone, no dubbing.
I know. It's really difficult to play music like that, you know, without losing it, I have to tell you, let alone not making mistakes, you know.
Yeah.
Really.
I saw a video of it, like Cinescope, black and white video, 40 years ago, and it was pandemonium in the background as they jockeyed in position for their few seconds before moving off the side to let another person in.
Mm-hmm.
Just... be a great video.
Yeah, it was an exciting show. Anyway, gentlemen, there's been a lot going on, and then in some ways there's not been much of anything going on since the last time you've been on the show. And I know, Ken, that you wanted to get into a topic about some health issues and remedies and procedures that are available to people that that are little known, and we've been covering some other topics over the past couple of weeks, so we haven't really been able to give you the time to do that. But I know that's part of what we wanted to do tonight. Any thoughts, first of all, on my opening comments?
Well, I'm glad to hear that this completely contrived, bogus, ill-advised attempt to railroad Truett with this completely impossible attempt to obtain a restraining order against Truett, as if any of the insane charges made by Sherry Kane and Len Horowitz about the Truett were whether there was any truth to it at all. He never met the woman in his life, and she's seeking a restraining order against him as if he was an ex-boyfriend who was threatening her. It was mm-hmm. just insane. He lives hundreds of miles away in another state, never met her in his entire life, exchanged some emails in which we have to remember who precipitated this entire event. It wasn't Truat. He didn't start in August of last year, get on a smear and slander campaign against Len Horowitz and Sherry Kane. The guy was sandbagged mm-hmm. from the beginning. These people have an agenda. That's certainly surprised me. I never imagined in a thousand years that Truat would be a party to such craven behavior. It's nuts. But that's what he did. That's where he went. That's who he decided to hook up with. So good luck to him. It's just it greatly dismays me that they even got it to a stage where a judge signed a paper of his restraining order. I mean, there was so much illegalities that took place here. It really is an indication of just how far down the road of corruption, at least the California courts, have gone. There was no justification to issue a temporary restraining order. This woman makes wild charges against the man. He's not even aware of this person's charges against him, and suddenly he's being given orders by a California judge, and he's not even a citizen of California. I mean, the improprieties in this thing were mm-hmm. were really upsetting. That's why I wrote an article or two when this stuff first began, when they first and they were talking about it as if it was a done deal and he's gonna show up in court. I think the original date was June 22, and I guess because one of the many improprieties in this woman's initial application, and the reason the judge never should have signed it, is she didn't sign the form. It says right there signature and date. There was no signature. And this is what they fax a copy to Truat. It has no signature on it. I mean, it's just unbelievable how, I don't know, Keystone Cop this whole adventure was. And yet, you know, the fact that this was obviously simply rubber stamped by a court clerk without actually examining it. I mean, there's negligence here. A judicial negligence up and down with the clerk's office, with the judge himself. If this judge is simply applying a stamp, issuing a judicial order all on his own without the judge reviewing it, there's judicial impropriety here all over the place. Somebody should pick up the ball on this and really go to town to examine all of the restraining orders, temporary or permanent, signed by this judge there in Laguna Hills. Very dicey judicial behavior.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that ought to cause a judge to be recalled from the bench. This is very serious stuff, because obviously what Len Horowitz and Sherry Kane were trying to do was to use this format as a pretext to bring, legal distress upon him. Now he has to what? Show up in court. He has to travel 800 or 900 miles to show up in another state court because the judge issues an order to appear in court. Now he's got to spend money on attorneys to defend them. I mean, the two of them, Horowitz and Kane, really should themselves be on the receiving end of a lawsuit over this, a serious lawsuit. With some serious money. As we mentioned when this first came out, the brazenness of their behavior spoke volumes of what obviously was taking place behind the scenes. They were being assured that there would be no, you know, backlash.
Repercussions, yeah.
No repercussions to them. So that, you know, man, this is real serious corruption. And so obviously it was the only thing to do. And thank God it nothing else happened but a dismissal, because that would have compounded the gravity of this flagrant attempt to use the courts to essentially shut up someone that they decided to make an opponent of theirs. I mean, it's one thing to be putting up articles and exchanging emails with all kinds of you're this and you're that, et cetera. But to actually go to court and try this, they richly deserve to be sued. And I hope Truat does follow through with a lawsuit, you know, filing a false affidavit. She claimed these statements are true.
I have another Spike Jonze song that's actually appropriate for what you're saying. No, I'm going to stop. Okay. I do, though.
Okay. Well, anyway, I'll stop. I'll stop with that. I didn't want to, but obviously, I'm.
No, you're making a point. You're making
gratified
a good
point. To hear it, but it the fact that it went as far as it did is an indication of how deeply the system has slid down into the bowels of corruption. It's not news to us that there's great variability in the quote justice you get from modern day American courts. For instance, I just heard in the news prior to the show that the a trial of that baseball player for essentially lying to a congressional committee was just declared a mistrial by the judge. And I was listening to NPR just prior to the show. And I heard the explanation being that
Roger Clemens, that was about.
Yeah, the Roger Clemens thing. And that the judge, you know, the commentator was saying, I think it was Neil Conan, was saying that, this judge had a reputation for being a no-nonsense guy and don't mess with him, yada, yada. Well, when I heard the reasons, what they're trying to do on NPR is to make this judge sort of look like a hero. You know, he's very tough on following absolute rules of the court procedure, and that the prosecution went ahead and ran it was either video or an audio recording, probably the video, of Clemens before this committee, allegedly, you know, saying things, perjuring himself, etc. And that the judge apparently had said prior to the trial that certain statements are not going to be allowed because they're hearsay, and so forth and so on. Anyway, when I heard the excuse, the judge was looking for an excuse to dismiss the trial, to declare that's what's clear to me. And I'm not, you know, I'm not a fan of this case or of baseball and so forth, but I can hear from the explanation the front story. Now, what it does occur to me is Roger Clemens is a famous ball player associated with a famous ball club. And I'm thinking there's money and power behind this man, A. And B, this is a scandal. They don't want to go to trial because we can't have something like this built-up hero of American baseball have his name besmirched as, you know, a guy who's taking steroid drugs, et cetera. You know, so we can't have that
because it
upsets the, you know, the upper ball players, as it were, you know, with the money boys and the power that be ball. We can't have these well-established national heroes, you know, actually face the music, as it were. I mean, we know that, you know, bankers and Goldman Sachs type, or even this guy from the IMF, et cetera, when they're caught in something, it's wrist slapping time. It's a 2-year parole for something, for millions of dollars of, you know, theft. It's always people of power, you know, skate. And that's what I see what's happening here. I see he was looking. When I compare this, let's say, hyper sensitive to judicial protocol that we're getting from the judge, compared to the treatment you got in a trial some years ago that you were explaining to me, in which the, you know, the complicity of the judge in attempting to railroad you in that case was so naked. And then when I think this, the way this judge in a high profile case, rather than he needed an excuse. So it's just another case, man. If you're wealthy and powerful in this country, you can get away with anything. And it's the little people. It's the little disempowered, you know, people who get a 90-year prison sentence here in California for growing marijuana in your basement, like I heard on the news 5 or 6 years ago with this insane three-strikes law here. So we have the largest prison population in the country, right here in California. I think it's well over 2 million men, overcrowding. You have people going on a hunger strike. It started at Pelican Bay about, I don't know, a week and a half, 2 weeks ago. And then now it's spread to something like, I think it's up to 13 or 14 different prisons here in California. These guys just stopped eating because of the intolerable conditions that they're suffering under. This, they have this let's call it a program. It's a form of torture. What it is, they put these guys in up at Pelican Bay. There's a security housing unit that's by the initials is SHU. So they call it the SHU. And these guys are in solitary confinement in a little cubicle, little cube of a space, smooth cement walls. That they get maybe, I think, once a week. It's a total of 10 hours of exercise out of an entire week. And they're typically spend 22 to 23 hours per day in the cell. No sunlight. The lights are sometimes always on or they're always off. And some of these men are in these conditions for years. And the reason they're subjecting them to it is they're trying to get them to, quote, rat out on other, quote, gang members as a way. So I think they call it debriefing. They have some cute name that they attach to what is essentially is a form of torture, you know, sensory deprivation. So it's become so intense and it's going on for so long. And, you know, the prisons guard union, the sheriffs and all that, their behavior is, you know, the more you act like a Nazi death camp guard, the higher you rise in the ranks among these guys. Now, I knew somebody who passed away a couple years ago, but he was in and out of the Orange County jail. He wasn't really a criminal. He just got, unfortunately, snagged by the system. And then so what he told me, what goes on at Orange County jail, it's a nightmare there. It's an absolute nightmare. And the behavior of the guards, oh, man. He was lucky he wasn't killed, and he tried his way to not interfere or get in anybody. He was an older guy too. He wasn't a young man. He was in his mid to late 50s at the time. And boy, the stories that he told me, whoa. And so what's the choice these guys have? Here in California, we must have the stupidest people in charge. Of legislators, you must be dumb to be a legislator in California, because if it's stupid, moronic, unproductive, ill-advised, that's the course they're gonna follow. People are leaving California. It's a lovely place to live, particularly Southern California. The weather, the climate here is ideal, but you have people who I can only describe accurately as imbeciles in charge of government here. And as a result, their policies are such that they make it so burdensome to live here, people are leaving. There's been an exit from the state for the last, I don't know, 5 or 6 years. It's continuing to escalate because the politicians don't pick up anything. I mean, it just doesn't matter what you complain about. It doesn't matter.
Ken, I need to interrupt for a second. Your voice morphing a little bit, so...
Okay, am I speaking too loud? Or
that's better. That's better there. Okay. Let's not forget, we've got ZS here.
Yes, I'm sorry. I probably ranted on too long. I'll let ZS take a turn here.
Yeah, I thought we were talking about health.
You're right. Yeah, I did get off on a tangent.
Yeah, you were sounding like Robbie the Robot, if you remember, from the
Forbidden Planet?
Lost in Space.
Oh, okay. Well, I predate that with Forbidden Planet. Yeah.
Okay. Well.
It's actually the same robot. They just recycled it.
Yes. Exactly.
Yeah.
Anyways, we're under martial law here in Salmon Arm right now. It turns out. Yeah.
Wow.
Of course, it hasn't been declared, but it had to go. A friend of mine had to going from downtown Salmon Arm to his home on the outskirts of town. Went through 5 RCMP police checks. What's happened is that there is a concert in town called Sturgis North. And, of course, Sturgis, South Dakota, has been famous for 500,000 bikers descending on a town of 8,000 for many years now. And somebody out of Toronto thought it would be a great idea to plop Sturgis North into Salmon Arm, right in the middle of British Columbia. And so there's all sorts of financial wrangling and maneuvering, and they were able to have a concert here. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we have had 30,000 Harley-Davidsons roar into town in the last day or so from all directions, mainly Western Canada, mm-hmm. and also several hundred RCMP officers come in. And they're setting up roadblocks everywhere. And the local, this is mainly a retirement community. 40% of the income this is from pensions in Salmon Arm. And it's driving the gray-haired ones a little bit batty right now. I'm 10 miles away from the concert, and I can hear the music from the concert right now when I open my front door. And it's what the RCMP are saying is that the Hells Angels and a total of 12 gangs are in town here to talk business. And so they want to be able to interrupt that, but basically it's just making a lot of people in this town really pissed off.
Would I be accurate in saying, ZS, that this isn't really martial law? This is more concert martial law?
It's concert martial law, yeah.
and bikers martial law, let's say.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. The RC, and, of course, you're talking about marijuana. The Hells Angels control all the grow-ups and marijuana grow in BC. And, of course, it's mainly shipped down into the States. For having a grow op, which is the size of a greenhouse, an operator will be arrested, go to court, and be discharged maybe about a week in jail, and they're out in the countryside setting another grow op. Even a person who has 1,000, 5,000 and has the right lawyers and the right contacts does not spend any time in jail.
Okay, now there's something funny going on with your sound as well. who knows? They may be hitting the whole stream.
Yeah.
Or at least in our communications. But there was a point where you said something, and then suddenly you just morphed into a robot. So
Robbie the robot?
I didn't get the end of the.
What was the sentence I was saying?
Well, you know, when I heard what I heard, I was thinking, okay, I got to remember this word, but it just kept going on, so I couldn't make out what you were saying. maybe Ken can help me out.
Well,
if he heard it, I don't know. Did you hear the same thing I heard, Dan?
So I think the morphing is just being heard at your end.
Okay, now I'm not hearing much volume out of you at all. So,
okay, I'm sorry. I was just saying that no, I did not hear any morphing sound at all. So it appears that you are hearing it. Perhaps you're hearing it at BBS Radio. That I don't know, but no, his voice sounded perfectly normal to me.
Okay.
I also have been hearing some morphing, especially Ken's voice.
Yes, I'm hearing that too. So the reason I bring it up is if I don't know what you said, it's a little hard to respond, especially if you ask me a question. Okay. You know, and
I'm just comparing California with British Columbia. Mm-hmm. Somebody with 2 ounces of marijuana is in jail forever, and here somebody with 5,000 plants is doesn't even go to jail.
Right.
There's a huge warp, and of course.
Well, what about the people that are stealing billions or trillions of dollars? I mean,
they're still in politics.
You know.
Our prime minister is now head of the diplomatic corps in London, England.
Mm-hmm.
Our Premier Campbell got promoted after stealing billions in one way or another.
Well, it depends who you steal it for, right? You can he stole it for the people that promoted him, right?
Yes.
Pretty much how it works. Go ahead. Anything you want to say?
Yeah, he is in London. He's diplomatic head of in the embassy there. And never trust a Campbell, especially a Gordon Campbell.
Hmm.
That's a Scottish saying. Never trust a Campbell because it goes back several centuries. Bonnie Prince Charlie and all that.
And, yeah.
I
did mention at the top of the show that we might touch upon some things related to little-known healing modalities.
Yes, thank you, Don. Yeah, I probably talked too long on the local scene. Yes, let me launch into some of those areas because this is what's more important to the average listener. First, I just want to just say this, that we need to bear in mind that up till today, at least, I think this is July 14th, we have not had a major, truly devastating earthquake event in America, nor have we had a major false flag event such as a nuke plant going up or et cetera. So we have to keep this in mind that there are forces at work behind the scenes that are preventing these events from unfolding. It's not for lack of desire on the part of the manipulators and the schemers to pull something, but their efforts are being stymied. So we have to think about it and be grateful for it and recognize it. That at least so far, we haven't had something truly horrendous happen. There were attempts to cause much greater damage along the Mississippi Valley than what was achieved by their flooding attempts. We know that there was some loss of life with the Joplin tornado, for instance, but things could have been worse. Of course, we still have the rest of the summer to go, and I'm sure they certainly have plans for hurricanes. They predicted them again. I think this year they made the prediction in February. I mentioned in past shows that you can't predict a hurricane. You can't predict a tornado in advance. The fact that they're doing it is because the manipulators with the equipment are planning on doing it, so therefore they're putting out the word to the media, to the weather service, etc., to make these predictions. And voila, when it happens, they'll lead you to believe that, well, they did say we were going to have this, or if we have the big earthquake in California, which they've also been planning on, because they've been running these public service announcements for the last couple of years, saying the big one's coming, the big one's coming. So I just want to remind all that you need to think about what hasn't happened that could have been devastating. It could have been very made life difficult for tens of thousands, perhaps millions of people. So let's remember it's necessary to be grateful for the good fortune we enjoy and to keep that in our mind as we think about moving towards a more enlightening future and as we think about what role we can play to not help the New World Order along by becoming independent. First thing you got to do is become independent of thought. Do your own thinking, not take your cues from pundits and critics and radio talk show hosts, etc. Analyze and think on your own, because most of what we're hearing over the radio is very much distorted information and propaganda.
We're on like the fourth round of Planet X, and
that's PSYOPs type operations, we'll call it, is another thing that the internet is filled with it, and you get these at least internet radio shows and YouTube presentations which talk about these utterly contrived PSYOPs, you know, the killer planet, Nibiru, Planet X, the 12th planet,
the Nephilim.
I'm trying to think, a guy named John Hogue for the last decade or more, probably more like 14 years, has been on Coast to Coast regularly talking about the Nostradamus prophecies. There's a woman named Dolores Cannon, who at least in the late 90s and first half of the new century, talking about Nostradamus and the terrible predictions that are coming. These are PSYOPs. We keep on the Elanine. It's laughable, as you were saying, suddenly this mysterious 29-year-old Russian, quote, scientist has got this devastating announcement about Elanine, and suddenly this guy's an authority. We should all just, you know, sit down and listen to this guy. He's 29. He's Russian. He must be an insider. He must have, because good Lord, he's Russian. And if we hear something on NPR with a British accent, it must be true, because that British accent is so crisp and clear, pronounced the words so well. It must be true. So we're being besieged by a con artist constantly.
You know,
on the radio.
When this is over, I'm going to produce a movie, and I'm going to call it Attack of the Killer Mayan Calendars.
Ooh.
And that's going to be the plot.
Okay.
It's like everybody is running from the Mayan calendar.
I
brought this up on Tuesday night with Christopher Holmes, and I said to him, you know, what have you seen a Mayan calendar? And he says, well, it's not like the regular calendars. It's round, you know. They use a different system, and they had a different number of days. And I said, well, you know, it's crazy that people are in fear of some interpretation of something that they haven't even seen. They haven't seen it.
Right.
And well, they could be deadly. You know, they're heavy. They're made of carved in stone.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I also sort of quipped that I think you can probably pick up your own copy at Walmart somewhere. They've got it. If it's not on a bed sheet, it's on a rug, you know, someplace, or on a thermos or a lunchbox.
The obsession with these
idiotic illusions, you know?
Yeah. I would say in probably all cases, they take references to groups and cultures and stories that are legitimate. I mean, the Mayan story is certainly legitimate. The Hopi Indian stories is certainly legitimate. It's not that the the source material they're using is totally part of a deception. No, it's not. It's the manipulators who are using those who embrace these areas and, let's say, tweak them to work towards the doom and gloom conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
And it, that's the same case with the, I think, the Japanese radiation psyop story. It's I have no complaint with people who are opposed to the use of nuclear energy, a person like Loren Murray, or certainly a very dedicated individual who's interested in taking care of this Earth and protecting it, Helen Caldicott, etc. However, these people, in my opinion, are being used by the manipulators to advance their radiation psyop scenario, because that pulls with it cap and trade, the evisceration of nuclear power plants, which on one, you know, on a simplistic level, you say, well, that's a good thing. Well, yes and no. There's a big trade-off. A lot of countries already are dependent on nuclear fuel. So as Zias pointed out in a show we did a month or so ago, is that if their desire is now to make a lot of money using natural gas, which is it would explain why you had this explosion of mining activity in this country with the fracking phenomena that's occurring in so many states. And when ZS talks about the relative cheapness of using these gas-driven turbines versus the great expense of operating a nuclear power plant, well, then we can see the reason that the manipulators need to create a pretext for, let's say, shutting down the nuclear power industry, because they want to replace it with another fuel source that's far less cheap to manufacture, and yet, but this, of course, won't make any significant reductions in our electricity bills, I'm quite sure, but it will make a lot more power for the players.
This ties in with the Gulf of Mexico and that whole scenario, because they were able to funnel several billion dollars to Petrobras, which George Soros and Obama himself had an interest. They're in Brazil.
Yeah.
You see? And they're going to be making a move in this gas deal. You watch.
Right.
That's,
and I'm sure there's pipelines in Europe, Eastern Europe, et cetera, that are playing into this scenario. So what we're presented as news, what we're given as let's say green advancements, you know, this use of buzzword of green, it's all contrived to fit a scenario of their making, in which case they're manipulating people's emotions, people's opinions, particularly on the left. I mean, I there's many issues that people on the left side of the spectrum, I have a similar take on their views. You know, I'm totally against the invasion of Afghanistan and Iran and globalization, GM crops. There's many issues that the left, I'm all for, because it's in the interest of preserving humanity and preserving freedom and trying to, live lives without the control of these people. Mm-hmm. But they, at the same time, simultaneously embrace so many issues that are contrived. They're Illuminati-created issues, global warming, peak oil, illegal aliens. You know, they too buy too easily the contrived script that we're getting from NPR, especially, but mainstream radio, et cetera.
So, you know, they came out with this term sustainability running, up the ramp towards the 2008 elections. And there would be a patriot group meeting on a conference call, and they have one or more guest speakers that would share information with this group. And there would always be somebody on the call. Oh, I'm all about getting sustainability. Hmm. Now, what does sustainability mean? If you're building a community a sustainable community. What does that mean? A community that lasts, that's not bombed, where the people aren't stricken with disease and military attacks, the strafing of their homes from drones dropping depleted uranium on their houses? Or does it mean sustainability of the corruption that's going on? You see? But they use these words and everybody's saying, yeah, let's make a sustainable community. What does that mean? Really, what does it mean? Oh, it's right. Not like cars. Cars aren't sustainable. They're supposed to fall apart before 10 years are up, you know. On and on. Everything they're making is like that, you see. So they come out with these words and everybody jumps on it. You know, then they have the word free energy. Oh, they want everything. They want free, take our Social Security benefits, free food, you know, free food stamps, free medical care, free education, free our people, you know. Let them come over here and parasitize this country, not like it was done in the past, you know. So the amount of corruption that's going on and the media's willingness to jump on these terms. You know,
well, it was Brundtland, the former prime minister of Norway, about 20 years ago, who first used sustainable development after she attended a Bilderberg meeting. So you can see that Tavistock probably had put that word together and brought it to the Bilderberg group, and she was given the privilege of bringing out to the public.
Yeah. What's been sustained? Bad weather, lousy economy, the corruption, you know, on and on. Everything that they're sustaining is what no one would choose for themselves. See? And they come out with a word for someone that that complains that a person has not documented who they are. Oh, the word to handle those people is birther. Birther? Did they call people at the health department birthers when they questioned the validity of a medical document that was submitted as proof of someone being born? Did they call them birthers, or was it just in 2008 that they began using that term? You see, this has been going on forever on this planet, all over the place, people faking who they are. And they're in this information age where you got to have buzzwords that don't mean anything to deal with people who are questioning the corruption, questioning the organized crime. Either one of you want to comment on that? I don't mean to rant, but that's what's going on. And here we are. We're not talking about health. But you guys went in that direction. So, do you want to add something, Zia?
Yeah. The word that, like, a word becomes negative when the connotation is twisted a little bit. Like the word handicap was a good word at its time when it was first brought out, but then because it was associated with people with disabilities, they became pejorative, and people who had disabilities did not want to be called handicapped because people thought it was really negative. Now the word disabilities, which is becoming pejorative, and it kind of moves along step by step. Good terms become bad terms, and so, like, the word birther came invented to dismiss those who are trying to bring the truth out. Or like a few years ago, they brought out the one, oh, that's old news. Old news is, you could dismiss the seeking of truth for an answer for a current issue by saying it was old news.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, you can see the hand of some linguist at Tavistock or some other brainiac institution that's well-funded, inventing terms to dismiss mm-hmm. truth.
Oh, yeah. It's like the word theory after the word conspiracy. Conspiracy doesn't need the word theory, and it never had it until the truth started coming out. Then they had to call it a theory. Well, it's not so stupid. And then they say, well, it's stupid because it's a theory. But science comes out with theories all the time, right? All the corporate world comes out with theories. And they don't call those stupid. See,
well, some of them are.
They are. I'm not saying they're not. But they don't call them stupid because they lend themselves to the corruption, you see? And they have to, you know, why try to stop what we're saying when we're actually saying something they know that is valid? Well, the reason is they don't want people to realize what's really going on,
okay,
what's really happening. They want people to be ignorant of that. And so it's like, ha, 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 look at them. Listen to what they're saying. You people are smart. You're not saying that. They are. So they're crazy. That's the approach they take. But that doesn't make it true. That's just the pathology and the psychopathy of their insanity. You know, I don't know how else to say it. They don't love themselves, so they can't love anybody else. They don't care about anybody but themselves. You can't get more narcissistic and egotistical than to try to oppress everybody else just because you've gotten away with it for so long. Oh, just keep doing it. It makes no sense. Eventually, it becomes old hat.
Right.
You know.
And,
good point you're making, though. Handicapped is not, there's nothing handy about it. You know, yeah, and it, yeah. And the cap, what's the cap all about?
Yeah. Yeah, it was invented term to make light of a difficult situation. It was less negative than what was used before that. What was used before that? Lame or not incapacitated, but some word like lame.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people did not like that word. Of course, and then, of course, that lame action carried over to the word handicap. And so the words are hiding an ugly truth and an ugly situation. And people change the words to make light of it or to lie about the difficulties of that person, or that person suffering through.
Yeah, I was listening to a commercial recently, and I have to laugh. They were talking about all these things that you're going to get if you buy this program, and they're going to throw in a diabetes cookbook that you can use at home. And I thought, how tasty that sounds.
No
diabetes cookbook. Now, there's a way to say that to make it sound appropriate, but that's not the intention, is it? It's to condition the mind to just accept anything.
And, of course, the mind can make a person diabetic. They've proven that many times that if you, by positive affirmations, you can overcome that inability of the body to process sugar.
Mm-hmm. Now we're getting into the health. Now Ken, this is your chance to say a few things here.
Okay. I do enjoy though these areas we're touching on because it's I think it's helpful to reflect on these thoughts. Okay. I'm going to briefly talk about a very simple modality or a therapeutic application. There was an Englishman by the name of L. E. Eman, his last name spelled E-E-M-A-N. And following World War One in England, he began to do certain experiments, and he did these experiments throughout the 20s and 30s and produced a book in 1947 called The Curative Properties of Human Radiations. And it's a very interesting idea that he put forth. And people at Borderlands picked up the story probably in the late 40s, early 50s, and they put it into their newsletter. So that's how it eventually came to my attention. But I'll explain that this guy discovered that the human body has polarized regions, and he assigned a plus sign to one polarity and a minus sign to the other. And he found that right-handed people, for instance, have a, for simply to attach, you know, a designation of a polarity, he said a positive right hand, and at the base of the spine, it was the polar opposite. So he called it a negative spine. And he found, for instance, that the right leg was positive. He found that behind the head, he could call that polarity positive. But the left hand, again, for a right-handed person, the left hand had a negative polarity. The left foot had a negative polarity, and the base of the spine had a negative polarity. He found, and this is the amazing part, that by cutting out a piece of metal screening, it could be any type of metal, copper, aluminum, stainless steel, I suppose, bronze, brass, perhaps, any form of metal screening that was 10 inches by 15 inches, that makes a rectangle, that could be placed under the head and under the small of the back and, well, under the butt, essentially. And what he did is he attached insulated copper wires. He would attach the wire to the corner of this rectangle. Okay, so rather than attach it in the middle, he always made a point of attaching it to the corner. And the way you can do it is you can simply get a insulated copper wire and put an alligator clip at either end of it. You can perhaps make them, I'm just guessing, but let's say make them 6 to 8 feet long or so and put an alligator clip at each end. And you attach one alligator clip to the corner of one of these screens. One is going to go under the head, and the other screen is going to go under the small of the back and your butt. So it's usually easiest to do this lying down. And if you have two people, each of them with a screen under each head and a screen, a 10 by 15 screen, under the small of their back and their butt, with cables attached, insulated copper wires, from the head screen of, let's say, person A. Let's talk about two people, A and B. Let's, for convenience, let's say they're both right-handed. Person A's head screen would connect to a, let's say, a handhold of some sort, metal handhold. Copper pipe is easy to use. You can cut something 4 inches long or so, 3/4 inch, 1 inch copper pipe. It worked fine. And attach this cable using the alligator clip to that handhold. And person B is holding that in his left hand. Now, the screen behind person B would also have a cable connected to the corner. But this this person's head screen would go to the left hand of person A. Now, I'll explain this more simply in a moment. I just want to lay out the diagram for you. You have two people laying down. There's going to be a type of radiation energy exchange. What I'm talking about is human radiations, sort of, let's say, aura energy, if you will, that can be exchanged between two people. It will have the effect of balancing out imbalances in the auras of these two people, and they will experience relief in different ways. So you have two screens below two people. You're simply connecting a cable to each screen to one of the hands of each party. And when you get the hookup correct, the correct hookup is essential for the therapy to work. If you hook it up incorrectly, rather than cause a smoothing of these aura energies, we'll call them, you'll have the opposite effect and you'll cause discomfort in both parties. So it's important to get the hookup correct. But once it happens, you essentially, the two parties, lay there for anywhere from 5 to 15 minutes holding these hand electrodes, and then you disconnect. At the most, you run this therapy out to perhaps 30 minutes is the max. But the typical application time is around 15 minutes. You don't want to go beyond 30. That's sort of the outside max maximum. When the hookup is correct and the people involved in this therapy are muscularly relaxed and quiet of mind, you will get an exchange of this aura flow, if you will. It'll tend to even out the flow for both individuals, and they will experience relief and improvements. If the parties involved are holding themselves tense or their mind is extremely agitated, it won't work. You must be relaxed of muscle and relaxed of mind for this event to take place.
Ken, while I'm listening, I'm thinking, well, I know of this same process without using the screens and the wires or the copper pipes and the alligator clips. I mean, well, but the average person can't do that. So
okay,
this is
I'm addressing this because this guy had such spectacular success with this, you know, over almost 30 years of experiments on this. And he waited a long time to publish his findings, you know. He did this for almost 28 years before publishing this book. So he gathered a lot of information. And whether the party believed, most people who did this were skeptics in most cases.
Yeah, it would serve that purpose. That's what I was going to comment on.
Right.
ZS would vouch for me. He knows what I'm saying.
Therapeutic touch.
Right.
And you, this can be done with the mind. This can be done with energy. It's not inhibited by distance. You know, you can do it around the world. In fact, but. You know, this process is similar, or it's this, it achieves the same results, but through a different approach.
Yes. The therapy, based on the fellow's name, is called Eamon Screens. And if you were to do a Google search under Eamon Screens, E-E-M-A-N, very likely you'll come with some articles, that refer to this this therapy. Just to finish my explanation, because I didn't quite finish what the attachments were for the two sets of screens. So you have two people, both right-handed, laying side by side. It could be on the floor, it could be on cots, but it's just as long as the person is laying down. They each have a 10 by 15-inch metal screen below their head and below the small of their back and their butt area. There are two copper pipe hand electrodes held in the hands of both parties. And at each of those pipes have an insulated copper wire that's connecting to, there's four screens total, and there's four hand electrodes, okay? So you have the head screen of person A connected to the left hand of person B. You have the head screen of person B connected to the left hand of person A. The other two screens, the person A, the screen under his butt, is connected to the right hand of person B. And the screen below Mr. B's back and butt area is connected to the right hand of Mr. A. So anyone who can't remember what I just said, if you're listening to a recording, just play it back and write out a little simple diagram showing two people laying down with these square screens and make the hookups on a diagram, and you'll be able to have the order correct. When two people try this, they lay side by side. Their muscles must be relaxed, and their mind must be reasonably relaxed at rest. If you're highly agitated, it will not work. Assuming you are at rest, hold on to these electrodes for 15 minutes and then let it go. Many people experience a sleepiness that comes over them rather quickly. If that's the case, if you feel like falling asleep, just fall asleep. You don't have to hold on to the electrode. It'll drop out of your hand anyway. And if you do fall asleep, you might notice when you wake up, you're going to feel different. People usually feel refreshed. This technique is extremely useful for people with insomnia. One of the most consistent results they get from using this very simple technique is people with insomnia problems completely lose their difficulty in falling asleep. So that if you were to perhaps try this, if you are an insomniac, with your partner before going to bed, it might do the trick for you. It has other effects. People with all kinds of physical conditions, infections, even disease conditions, have experienced remarkable changes in the wake of this simple short application therapy. Very often, the changes would begin within an hour or two of doing this technique. Sometimes it would be a day later. Sometimes there'd be a one-day delay, and then they would notice things. If you do this and feel a great deal of discomfort, simply let the electrodes go. And the first thing to ask yourself to check is, the directions I gave you were for right-handed people only. If you're a left-handed, two left-handed individuals applying this, simply reverse the polarity of the description I gave to you for the left and right hand, left and right foot, etc. Now, if you have a right-handed person trying to do this balancing with a left-handed person, you have to reverse the order on party B, if you understand what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. The description I gave you originally 5 or 6 minutes ago only applied to two right-handed people. If one is right-handed, let's call him A, and B person is left-handed, you reverse the order of the hand connections to the left-handed person from what I described, okay?
When I heard you describe that, yeah. I could hear it set to music.
Okay.
You know, it's like the left hand is connected to
the right hand.
Screen, exactly. Screen's connected to the right hand, and the right hand's connected to the butt screen. That's what
yes, exactly.
About.
Now, you won't realize this can achieve anything until you actually try it. Most individuals, particularly when he was first doing it, simply said, how can this be? This is crazy. But he would say, please, try it anyway. In the vast, vast majority of cases, he got positive results. There are some exceptions. I'm going to do an article on this, and I'll get into the exceptions. But the exceptions are relatively rare. If you remember what I said about left and right-handed person have opposite polarity. Some people, even though they might be right-handed, this is only some people, their aura energy is reversed. and they will get discomfort rather than relief. Mm-hmm. If you try this and feel discomfort, just let the electrodes go. Don't feel you have to hang in there. Most people become sleepy. That's the most common symptom. And they become sleepy very quickly, and very often they fall asleep laying there. That's fine. Just allow yourself to sleep as long as your body wants to sleep. And when you wake up, you'll probably notice improvements. People with insomnia, nervous conditions particularly, nervous relative syndromes, perhaps things like, and again, I'm just guessing at this point, but MS, Parkinson, that sort of thing, they might find relief from this. It's so easy to do. The science is real. This guy's documented all his work in his books, and the readback from readers after they published this article in the Borderlands newsletter, I think it was in the early 50s the first time they did it. I think they ran it again somewhere in the early 60s. Was remarkable. The feedback from the readers was they just couldn't get over it. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to just explain the technique.
Yeah.
I'll probably make a more available on my website. I can perhaps make a copy of this newsletter that mm-hmm. I read the story from, et cetera. But it's an easy thing to do, and people need to try these ideas because more often than not, there will be pleasantly surprised with the results they see.
Well, it's sort of like power production. If you use Tesla as an example, and Niagara Falls, and using that as a generator to create the electricity, you're just completing a natural circuit that's there. You know, metaphysically, it's there in reality, but it's. I would say it's dielectric in nature. In other words, it's like the electricity that's outside of the electrical circuit moving through space, like mm-hmm. the natural grids.
Yes.
And so this is capitalizing, physically forcing the participants to do what a metaphysician would do just by understanding which way the energies flow, or
yes.
or two metaphysicians, mm-hmm. you see. Yes, I know you want to comment on that.
Yeah, I've also seen some oriental acupuncture guide diagrams with the 360 meridians, but also with positive and negative on the left and right hand. And generally they say the back is negative and the front is positive, but it's interesting mm-hmm. that Eamons found out the behind the head's positive and behind the tailbone or the ball on the back is negative. It's very interesting.
I've had people ask me which way the energy flows. Is it flowing, let's say if your right hand does it flow into your left hand or does it flow into your right hand and come out the other hand? Well, just think of how, if you're right-handed, how you would play baseball, for example. You'd put the glove on your left hand, if you were right-handed, and you would throw the ball with your right hand. So picture the ball moving into the glove. That's the direction the energy flows on a right-handed person. And on the left-handed person, it's the opposite. But when they put the baseball glove on, they're catching and throwing with the opposite hands of the right-handed person. That's again, the opposite direction of the energy flow. Now, those people don't have to ask each other. The two approaching it from a metaphysical approach would sense which way in each one and in each other. They would sense which way the energy is flowing. So it's very simple, and they're less likely to make a mistake in that regard because it's a natural process that happens anyway. But Ken is right. For the person that's just learning to see what it feels like to have that balance, you have to take a more pragmatic and a more elementary approach to it. But it taps into the same forces, regardless of what your experience is, if you make the correct connections. Ken, do you want to comment on that?
Yes. Well, this fellow Eamon, remember, all this is simply empirical observation on his part. He wanted to describe this appearance of polarity, boundaries to the body. So he arbitrarily assigned the plus sign to the right-handed person for his right hand and for his right foot. And he found the back of the head was plus for his system, but he found the front of the head to be negative, which is the same thing that Zias just said. Whether the acupuncturist used the expression negative, and this guy was just arbitrarily assigning one of the two polarities.
Yeah.
So it's the same principle. And Eamon found for right-handed person. Left hand, right foot is positive. Right hand, right foot is positive. Left hand, left foot is negative. Back of the spine, negative. Back of the head is positive. And by inserting these screens, this energy is picked up by the screen, flows through the insulated wire. He made a point not to use bare wire, but insulated copper wire. I mean, it's obviously easiest to use stranded copper wire rather than solid. It's just a lot easier to maneuver around. And you got to hold it. You could just strip the wire open and hold it in your fingers, but there's not a lot of contact by using a copper pipe for an electrode. You get a lot more surface area and you'll get a better contact. And what's flowing, I believe, it's not necessarily third-dimensional electrons. It could be magnetic currents could be flowing, but it also could be there is this higher order, I'm calling it aura radiation energy. I'm just got to put a tag on it. He didn't know what to call it. He simply called it human radiations. But now we know so much that there is this field of energy that surrounds the body that we call the aura. We also know that it's multi-layered. There's like seven layers to it.
There is an etheric body too.
Well, that's what I'm referring to.
Yeah,
so I'm talking about what we're calling the aura. The one closest to the body is the one that's typically seen, depending on your health, you know, a quarter inch, a half inch, an inch out from the body. It kind of has a purplish hue to it. A lot of people can see it. And then as you go out into this mental body and this emotional body, as it's called, it sort of gradually evolves into sort of an egg shape, oval shape, et cetera. I'm sure Zias knows more about this than I do. But we're talking about, because of disease, because of, let's say, dammed up energy flow that leads to particularly problems with the nervous system, it seems that this simple technique can help allow this energy to flow. And it also, if you have a person who's ill, do this with a person who's not ill, it seems that the energy from the healthy person, aura energy, I'm calling it, will flow into the person who's weaker and ill, and it will help him recover faster. So an expression they used in Borderlands was they called it, in the head of this in this newsletter they pull up about the Eamon screens, they titled the newsletter Cooperative Healing. And as I mentioned to you on a phone conversation, there was that fellow in Ohio, Lee Kroc, who for a number of years sort of had a place there. I was never there, and I never saw pictures, but I presume he had bed or cots or something. He simply had people hooked up with Eamon screens, or Eamon screens, I suppose it's pronounced. And he was, you know, getting pretty interesting results. And people were traveling there to do this. They didn't have to travel there. They could have made their own screens at home and just done it at home with their, you know, with their spouse, with their mate, with their relatives. You can do this with four people, six people, et cetera. It could be, it's rather interesting when you get a large circuit of people hooked up. The polarity must be correct for it to work right. But two people do it. You can even do it with one person.
Mm-hmm.
If that's all you've got.
Yeah, that involves like bed springs and all of that stuff, you know. Or
no, you can do it with one person with just using these two screens I'm describing.
Yeah.
Instead of having party B, let's say you're alone. You've got a head screen behind your head and you got a butt screen. You have two electrodes, one each hand. You simply need two connecting cables. Your left hand cable is connected to your head screen.
Okay.
And your right-hand cable is connected to your butt screen, and you can circulate your own energy and still get the effect, even if you're only one person.
Are you waiting for a comment?
Yeah, I finished my thought, yeah.
There was a visual there, but I decided at the last
time. I know. Well, you were not going to go there. I know.
I thought of something rather funny though, because you went to three places, but you didn't come back all the way around. And I thought the butt stops here.
Oh my God, Mr. Pun.
Anyway, go ahead. Yes.
Done pun. Yeah. Yes.
Well, also on the Oriental chart, on the five element chart, which is actually five qualities, air is not included, earth, water, fire, metal, and wood. There's various yin and yang qualities to each of those, hot and cold, wet and dry. And you can see that... connecting people up like that, you would actually, five or six people in a row, you'd build up like putting five batteries together, so the currents would be increasing with each person connected up in series. It looks like a series type circuit, but with the etheric power going from one person to another person to another person. So
now there's an assumption that there's sort of a purity going on here with the energy. What about, you know, a very dark individual or a parasitic individual?
They might
either one of you want to comment on that?
Well, they create a block and they suck, it create a heat spot and might blow that darkness right out of the room. If you have, usually, generally, it's more positive than negative,
mm-hmm.
and it would take a really negative person to cancel out four, five, or six positive people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a phenomenon that occurs when someone is really suffering from some disease, if you want to call it that, and a person that is sensing the energy flow through that person can actually take in some of that negative energy, but through the fingers up to the arms. And
yeah,
the only way to get relief is to rinse it off with lukewarm water.
Mm-hmm.
Just because that energy is powerful enough, let's say, to enter another person. I mean, this happens on a spiritual level too. So, you know, I think one has to be certain that they're approaching this from the right way, that you don't want to expose yourself to the wrong kinds of vibes, if you understand my meaning.
You know, like a massage therapist who's doing a one-on-one type of treatment on somebody who's really negative will probably suck up that condition, making that mm-hmm. a really negative person feel really good for a while, but then that masseuse will probably have to many hours, maybe many days recuperating.
Yeah. Ken, I don't mention that to be the devil's advocate here. I just want to stress that is an issue. You know, is that you can balance the energy between two, let's say, sympathetic or empathetic people, but, you know, if you're starting off with opposites already, just in the basic nature of an individual, in terms of negativity or darkness, you know, one has to ask if they want to have that kind of energy exchange.
Well, Eamon reports in his book, they do discuss these areas in this rather lengthy newsletter. It's two-sided, and let's see, it's 20 pages. So it was a fairly deep discussion, and they did go into, let's say, the hard cases. As I mentioned in the beginning in explaining this, the overwhelming majority, vast majority of people get positive results. Of course, you might not see any results. So I wouldn't just do it once, and if you notice nothing, forget about it and say this can't be. Mm-mm. What I would do is I would, you know, give it a fair chance. The vast majority of people do notice improvement. He does talk about a few cases, Eamon, in which he got in a circuit with an individual that was looking for relief, but had so much, let's say, internal difficulties that even though the polarity was hooked up correctly, he was not getting the results that he expected to get. He got, you know, more of a negative reaction. So he said that's very rare, though. He explains he'd gone through many thousands of people. He just didn't do this with a few dozen people. Mm-hmm. He did this experiment with many, many thousands of people. And by and large, you know, I think the energy we're talking about is more on the order of the currents that circulate in the body in a living human body. And I'm not sure why. I'm just thinking it's not so much a matter of if the person is of, let's say, a more evil motivation. I don't believe it's going to necessarily infect you or have that type. I don't think it's that type of crossover. However, if the person is agitated, as I told you in the beginning, and if people who are, let's say, extremely negative, you will, typically they are agitated, it typically goes hand in hand with that type of personality, then you won't have success because he found out, as I mentioned to you, if the person is physically tense, you know, tight, uptight, as we say, if the muscles are tense, it somehow prevents this, let's call it nervous energy flow, from flowing in the proper way to get the effect. And if you're agitated, you know, upstairs, if you're really anxious, worried, upset, it's not going to work. So bear that in mind when attempting to do that. The two people need to be relaxed and calm. And you could try it on yourself. Just like I said, that's the easiest way to start. It's pretty easy to put these things together, you know. The materials are easy, and I would suggest to people to try it. They might be very surprised at the results they get. And it doesn't cost you anything, you know. And this guy reports incredible responses from people with all kinds of infective conditions. It's simply amazing what he was getting. So, I remember there used to be a guy in the 1990s, New Dawn magazine out of Australia, talked about, I can't remember his name now. I think it ended with a W. He might have been a New Zealander. He offered a course that he advertised in every issue of New Dawn. And he had a method of acupressure in which he was holding a point for a very long period of time. First, he had the ability to determine what points to hold. And he would hold pressure against this point for sometimes hours at a time. And what he got Whitman, maybe that was his name. I'm trying to remember. Whitman somehow was popping up in my head. I believe this man was killed, actually. I think he was murdered because what he was doing simply worked too well, and somebody wanted to put him out of business, and they did. He died unexpectedly. I forget how, but it was somewhere in the early 2000 range, I believe. But anyway, he found that by holding this acupressure point, you know, which is similar to the points acupuncturists use for a long period of time until he got a big change of energy. In some cases, people had chronic problems. I mean, like a chronic neck problem, or their arm was locked in a locked up position for years, or they couldn't walk. Or it was amazing what this guy was achieving. I couldn't get over the reports I was reading. He had a I guess it was a DVD set. It was quite expensive, maybe 15 or 20 DVDs. It was around, I think it was $600. And back in 97, 98, 99, you know, that's quite a bit of money. Mm-hmm. But I did read, and I was talking to people who were applying the technique, and they said, this is off the charts. So there's something to this. And he was somehow relieving a blockage of this aura energy. I'll just put a name on it. You know, I know people call it chi and all that. I got all that. But there's some sort of aura's energy which he was unblocking. And his results were spectacular. I mean, the arm became instantly unlocked after being in a locked position for 2 years, you know, with the muscles atrophied the whole nine yards. So I believe something like that is taking place with this Eamon screens. It's somehow allowing a flow of stymied, blocked aura energy to flow.
Yes.
And once the flow takes place, yes.
Yeah, we do have to wrap. I hate to stop the topic, cut it off, because it's an interesting topic. But you're going to be with us again next Tuesday, the 19th. So maybe we can talk about this and some other examples of these types of devices that people can avail themselves to. But we do have to say goodnight.
Okay, so, we'll stop today.
It's a fascinating topic, and I know that there are people out there that know that this stuff does work. Now, it's quite possible that this gentleman had more pressure put on him than he was putting on himself. That may have been the cause of his demise.
Oh, the fellow I'm thinking is maybe Whitman. That could be. I don't know. But I was very suspicious when he unexpectedly – he wasn't that old. I think he was in his early 50s perhaps. So I was very suspicious when it happened. And anyway, at the time I – you know, had I had the money, I didn't have it at the time, I would have gotten his DVDs and studied his techniques.
Is that where the Whitman samplers came from?
No. No, that's an entirely different thing.
Oh, okay. ZS, any closing comment you'd like to make tonight?
Yeah, there's all sorts of different modalities in healing. And as you mentioned earlier, that people can project healings around the world from any place. Had Reiki treatments from all sorts of different directions, and healing thought and healing intent. Of course, when you have hands-on healing, there's power moving.
Yes, you know, the power of thought. Thought can move hundreds of billions of times faster than light. It's amazing how fast and how far thought can go. There's really no limit to where it can go. And this is not just thought that we're talking about, but since you mentioned it, you know, that hit me that thought occurs at such an incredible speed. We don't even think about it. We don't even really have a handle on understanding it and putting it to proper use or better use. Go ahead, ZS.
Right. Yeah. One of the things I was taught 40 years ago by my teacher was that Hercules was an actual historic person. And what he used, he was a small person who participated in the games, the Olympic games of his era. And he wired up copper wires from his head through his arms, down his trunk to his feet. And it gave him superhuman strength. And so this Eamon's technique rings a bell with me from something I was told 40 years ago. And somehow it ties in. But I have not worked that out, exactly how it works out.
Hmm. So now, you think Samson, when they cut his hair off, that maybe that short-circuited that...
It could be. Or maybe that's the power of thought, and your thoughts are going through your hair, through from the follicles to the split ends.
Yes. Well, you can tell it's gotten late, gentlemen. But we do have to have fun with these topics once in a while and not take things so seriously. As Ken was saying last time on the show, I think it was on the 5th of this month, he was reminding us that we need to laugh and keep a good sense of humor. And it's true, because there are so many things that are taken so seriously. I mean, if you're going to be afraid of the Mayan calendar, I don't know, go to Walmart and try and buy one. And if you can't find one there, then just go home and forget about it. That's really the approach we should take with some of this stuff. But I want to thank you both for being on the show, ZS. Your essays are seen at Ken's website, and anyone that would like to read his take on a lot of interesting events that are occurring around the planet or aren't occurring around the planet, go to Ken's website, educate-yourself.org, and he's got them plastered all over the place. Ken, I want to thank you for being on the show and for the work that you do and your willingness to discuss all these complicated issues in such simple ways. And look forward to your next appearance on Evident Footprints. And have we lost Ken, or is he...
I'm sorry. Thank you, Don. And the same here. I look forward to our next talk as well.
Okay. Well, gentlemen, I thank you for being on the show. And we're coming up to the close of a week tomorrow, another week. So have a great weekend. And we'll see you here on Tuesday, the 19th of July. Same time, same place. Folks, that wraps it up. You've been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. And our guests, Mr. Ken Adachi and Mr. Zuranova Star Livingstone. Special thanks to Wind Talkers Radio Network for broadcasting Evident Footprints. Over at BBS Radio, we had Seth Hendrick on the sound. I'd like to thank Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join me tomorrow night when my special guest and co-host will be scientist-inventor Jim Murray. In the meantime, I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.